cross. Charge we're not sure about.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 120 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. Believe it or not, we can find a time.
Yeah, we got a few people.
We got an episode.
We got to be the intro guys.
Oh, wow. So we're happy and scared. El Ricatron is in the house. And how you doing, Porter?
I'm doing pretty good. Amazing. Just had a phenomenal weekend. Spent it, went to the fam. I've now charted out three amazing things. One is brewing beer. Two is going up to Tahoe for the snow. And three is skydiving. So I've got a good agenda planned up.
Yeah, it's jumping out of airplanes. Wow.
Yeah, perfectly good airplane. I'm going to jump out of it.
Yeah. Well, recently I went to Death Valley, and I'm Mark Farley. There you go. Let's keep going.
Awesome.
This is a record, like three of us on the show.
Yeah, instead of just the one-on-one. Okay. Yeah. Well, big news this week just came out yesterday. We're recording here on whatever it is, March 1st. I guess it's a Wednesday this time. But AWS, not so bueno yesterday. All kinds of interesting things were broken, as it were, S3. Was something that did not work as expected. We're going to talk about that first, and then our awesome podcast organizer extraordinaire has had a couple other things that we may or may not talk about, depending on how Yadin, Mark, and I feel when we get to it. But more effort from BlackBerry. Yeah, maybe something new, maybe.
And who cares?
That might be in the who cares button, but you know, last I looked, we did have a listener from Canada, so we'll do our best to cover it. Mm-hmm. FCC votes on net neutrality to lift it or something. We'll check that out. Amazon claims that Alexa is protected by the First Amendment in a murder case. Interesting. Microsoft Research is working on some AI to put coders out of a job. Scary talk, but kind of interesting. ZeniMax puts in an injunction over Oculus. We'll have to check that out. SoftBank has some news about big money investment. Starts with a B and rhymes with Ilion. We'll go back to that. The autonomous car is over and Silicon Valley lost. Ooh, who's winning there? Disney has their own ubiquitous wireless charging in a hotel room. Go figure. That way you don't have to put any power ports in there. That's interesting. And, of course, we ended with the news about Amazon service outage yesterday, but we're actually going to make that start because that list kind of came in chronological order. Let's start with AWS, the cloud dissolved. Tipped over, at least part of it did. Anybody have an opinion or not able to do any work yesterday?
Oh yeah, I got hit with this. There was one of my SaaS applications, a lovely one I like to use called Grammarly, that just decided to conk out because it was on an Amazon instance and just blew up, and so I wasn't able to access that. It's one of those AI bots that's putting those crazy proofreaders out of a job.
Good thing Grammarly is a word spelled right.
Yes, exactly. That's one thing actually that we don't look at. See, when Amazon goes down, one region, I wonder how many jobs that would put back into the economy that people can't access all these SaaS applications. I imagine if S3 or Amazon going down is actually a job creator, we should look into that.
I think it's more of a head scratcher, like why do we get into this problem, rather than, or if anything, Starbucks might get a big burst. People just go for a random coffee.
Yeah,
we got to make America great again.
Oh no!
We can't be having this Amazon failure shit going on. It ruins the economy. We got a lot of internet problems. We've been going to hell ever since Al Gore invented the internet. We've had problems. And so I think what we're going to do is we're going to cut off the U.S. and we're going to have our own internet and everybody else can have their internet. And then that's how we're going to do things from now on. Germany, you can have your own internet. You can have your own second-class internet. Everybody else. Maybe we'll let England in on our internet.
Is this coming from a guy who doesn't put a computer on his desk? Come on.
That's all fake news, though. Amazon really didn't have an outage. That's just fake news.
There is no Amazon?
There's no
Amazon. I don't use Amazon. I I never have used Amazon.
I've never been to Brazil. Okay. Anyways, goodness. But I think that that was actually really interesting because it exposed, in my opinion, that there are a lot of services that really only do a single instance of their S3 part of their app design. Okay. I saw a number of really good, interesting tweets come out yesterday, and they're like, you know, I'm gonna shout out to one guy, and I even retweeted him. And this guy was like tweeting it best. And it's unfortunate because Fernando doesn't even have that many followers, but basically, and Fernando is FMC_SEA. He said he was rocking the AWS cloud hashtag yesterday, and he said, He highlighted a text message. He was basically supporting someone when they said, when Amazon S3 is down, somebody texted back and said, what's S3? And he said, the internet's hard drive. And that is so, so true. But it exposed that a lot of applications that are built on AWS don't take in domains of failure, which no matter what you do, whether it be your data center, a hard drive in your server, or the cloud, you have to take into consideration of that. Just because it's not your kit doesn't mean it could be your problem. And same problem, different cloud.
Well, Rick, when you're a small, scrappy startup, you can't do mass, like multi-region availability zones. You just can't do it. It's just a cost prohibitive thing. But to your point, yes, it does expose which of those scrappy startups have deprioritized that, you know, multi-availability zone failover architecture because of costs or strategic reasons or otherwise. And it did. It shined a spotlight on those. And like one of the authors said, it was, you know, said that when Amazon has an outage, it's famous. I mean, these outages happen, mm-hmm. you know, all the time, you know, in people's data centers, but it's famous. People are still talking about the September 2015 one that happened for 5 hours. But it's tough on Amazon because even some of their own services to even alert people that there are outages. I think you were mentioning that before the show started, that they couldn't even alert people of an outage because their service was running.
Yeah, their dashboard was down.
Their dashboard was down. I think that's interesting.
Yeah. That's interesting. Amazon, your dashboard has to be able to run in multiple regions. Come on, you got to spring Chaos Monkey on your own stuff, Amazon. Let's go with it.
You know, and it's also interesting, I just did a recent deep study on Azure pricing by region, and it's actually very interesting. The same VM in different regions based on their generation, their usage, their capacity, their power, everything. The same VM can have 100% markup in another region. Very, very interesting, right? If you're talking about a virtual machine, a compute node. But Amazon East 1 was, let's just say it's the first, it's the default, it's the cheapest. So it's going to be the most popular.
Ichiban.
Yeah, so it's like the Nirvana. It always, everything kind of has a hook there, including a dashboard. So I think it's kind of interesting that that's the one that messed up. It's the most important one.
Yeah, that one's gone down before, though, right? Wasn't that the November 15 one?
You know, that's the other thing about these headline outages. You always forget about them real short. I don't even remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to keep people from using Amazon, but it is interesting. I mean, they have nowhere close to 5 nines or 4 nines, right? It's like 3 nines. What would you? Yeah. What are they at, right?
Ask anyone at any office and ask them what their uptime is just for their Wi-Fi. And the uptime for the Wi-Fi is not going to be anywhere near the Amazon's uptime. It just isn't. So you're going to be out on Wi-Fi at your local office more than Amazon's going to be down. Just to put that in perspective.
Yeah, that's Wi-Fi though.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter like if you know what you've got access to or not, you're going to have more downtime just from not having your Wi-Fi access, which you know a lot of the people just that's all they have.
Yeah, but it's different, right? That's for accessing an application in the web, right? But if your application goes down and customers can't get to it, if you're trying to serve customers and then nobody can get to it, it's like everybody's Wi-Fi goes down for that amount of time.
Right? Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So that's the problem. Yeah. So yeah, Wi-Fi's flaky. Everybody knows it. But I mean, you kind of expect, you know, the pseudo cloud infrastructure to actually work, and it does. But it works on a, you know, on a catch as can. It's better than catch as can. It's more reliable than that. But it's also got holes. This is the last time Amazon's going to have a failure. It'll happen again, right? Sometime this year, probably. Well, it was this year, so sometime probably later this year we'll see another one. If not, it'll be 2018, right? It's going to happen.
No, I agree. I'll double down on that, Mark. I'm sure we'll see something.
Or there's going to be smaller, isolated ones in different zones and regions. Just this is a big one, and it was long, so it's very visible, very felt. Big old kick in the nuts.
Yeah, and just to be fair to Amazon, Azure's had these problems too, right?
True, you know,
and
true.
I'm trying to remember if there were any big Google outages. Have there been any big Google outages?
Would that even make the news if Google had an outage?
Well, Gmail. Yeah. Gmail had a huge one for a long time ago.
Yes. Oh yeah. I remember that one. Ooh, yeah. That was brutal. Yeah. I was actually concerned about that one.
And it's one of those things that it's like that was an application, right, rather than just a platform cloud. But in the end, I think it's kind of the same thing.
Yep.
Interesting. Well, moving swift.
Part of the reason why I bring up the whole five nines thing, right, is that there's some stuff going on in storage, and it's not one of our news items for the week, but this week Nimble Storage announced something called Cloud Volumes. I don't know if either of you guys saw that. And so, you know, what Nimble is doing, and what is it similar to what NetApp has done in the past, what is it, private volumes or private, you know, cloud things or whatever. They set up a data center in a hosting facility that's close to these large internet, you know, Azure, AWS data centers, and they have private high-speed, low-latency pipes into those data centers. So customers of Nimble can now have copies of their data. They can have snapshot copies or whatever that run close to the cloud. And if a customer wants to run a compute instance in either AWS or Azure, they use these high-speed pipes. The data is stored outside of the cloud data center in Nimble's data center, even though the compute runs inside. And so we're now seeing a couple different companies doing that. And one of the reasons that Nimble gave for this was that you get, you know, a lot more reliability, better reliability of storage. And I guess this kind of proves their point.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. There will be more. And, you know, the takeaway is if it's important, design it to be available if you can, and when this type of stuff happens, you're in good shape. Next on the news,
what would be interesting is as a consumer of an app, if you can, you know, if you can find out whether or not your application is actually runs in more than one region, right?
Well, that's a good.
Right? Is there any certification for that? I don't think there is, but it'd be kind of worth knowing.
Would be very much worth knowing. I mean, you could like get the sniffer on the network, but that's completely interpretive. You don't know if the app is using different services that might be single region or such. That's a really good kind of a audit process question.
Hey, let's do a startup.
Yeah. BlackBerry is at it again, but I think they actually have a chance here. Let me, full disclosure, I used to administer one of the largest BlackBerry installations in the world, believe it or not.
Hey, now!
Yeah, big time. But anyways, they have this device that is called the Key One. And the Key One is basically an Android phone with a keyboard. What do you think, Mark? Do you think it has a chance of making it? I'm looking at it. Because it's Android, I think we have a chance.
I'm not getting this at all, Rick. What is it?
It's an Android phone, but it's BlackBerry. BlackBerry hardware. So yeah. BlackBerry always had the keyboard. They always had a really good keyboard.
Oh yeah.
And it's a physical keyboard. It's not a screen interpreted one, right?
You might have to scratch
coffee sugar in between the keys. You got to get that out, okay? Because it's a real keyboard. But BlackBerry's trying one more time. It's called the Key One, and it's an Android phone, but it's BlackBerry hardware design. So a lot of blah blah blah.
Dead, so dead in the water already, dead on arrival. I mean, I know you love it. I know you want that tactile thing of both thumbs getting indented, you know, almost at the same time doing shift something. You know, it's so cool. But the problem is the channel, right? Is AT&T or Verizon or anybody else anywhere else, you know, Vodafone actually going to go to bat and really try to make this thing work? I think the answer is no. Right.
You're right. Because they've got too much going good with iPhones and Samsungs and Droid from Google. This third horse might not get any hay.
I think it'd be very hard for them to get that sold.
Fair observation. I don't disagree with that. But there was a time a couple years ago, the Z10 that BlackBerry had. I think that was only 2 or 3 years. I actually thought about getting that. I really did. What stopped me was the lack of an app store. But if this is Android, and it was then, I would have done it, you know. So, interesante. We're split. We'll see how it plays out. But, probably you're right, but the optimist in me says that it would be interesting to see.
Yeah, and then the pessimist in me says no effing way.
There we go. Moving on, we have news out of The Verge about the FCC is voting to lift net neutrality transparency rules for smaller internet providers. So in all of our proper research that we do in this podcast, I'm skimming through the news as we're recording here, and I think that the fact that it's smaller internet providers, I think that's a bunch of BS. I don't think you need a break if you're small, or more rules because you're big. I actually think that's kind of silly. In this technology world, it'd be one thing if it was a manpower thing, but net neutrality and transparency, I mean, that's just automation and systems and all this type of stuff. And then additionally, I'd say that there are very few mom-and-pop internet providers in this world anymore. I don't know. Did you get to skim through this? Any opinion?
You know, I just kind of have religion about net neutrality. And anything that upsets net neutrality, I'm just kind of programmed to wake up and say no and put up a sign. Mm-hmm. So I haven't actually looked into this to understand the nuance of it. So they're trying to divide net neutrality between large carriers and small ones? Is that it?
Yeah, basically, one paragraph makes a lot of sense to me here about internet providers with fewer than 250,000 subscribers would not be required to disclose information on network performance fees, data caps, thanks to this rule change, blah, blah, blah. Initially, this was an exemption for fewer than 100,000. But whatever, actually, you and I kind of don't like this for two separate reasons. And I actually agree with you. This is like one of those Supreme Court rulings where it's a they disagree on it, but for different legal reasons, right? But basically, you don't like the idea of anything breaking net neutrality, and I agree with you there. I don't like the idea of different rules if you're big or small, unless it's something like tax, which, you know, that can scale better. But so any way around this, it just feels like a stupid waste of time in a court.
Yeah, I mean, if there's unfair business practices, you know, because of monopolies or I don't know what you'd want to call them, large gulags of carriers that don't allow small carriers, you know, to compete, right? If there's anti-competition, let's make sure there's competition, mm-hmm. right?
Especially in the rural America and for the rest of the world, for that matter, good service is actually a challenge, and I'm all for making, you know, the smaller players have an option here, but I don't know. Just kind of feels like a waste of time with the FCC, if you ask me.
Yeah, I suspect this is just one of those administration changing, you know, random things that probably isn't necessary. But I need schooling on this, Rick. I'm sorry, I've been asleep at the wheel here.
Well, me too, but I just, that one bit on, you know, the size and the rule shape, it just kind of feels interesting. No worries, we'll move on. Now, this one is actually pretty interesting. So, summary, murder in the U.S. state of Arkansas. There's a search warrant to extract the last 48 hours of recordings from the Alexa in the home.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So, Amazon is contesting a search warrant from police in Arkansas who are seeking 48 hours of recordings and responses made by an Amazon Echo that belonged to a murder victim. Interesting. So Amazon claims, I'm reading this, that Alexa's recordings and responses are subject to free speech protections under U.S. Constitution Bill of Rights, and that prosecutors need to provide more evidence that that audio is essential to the case. But I think this is actually a very, very important, like, precedent. First of all, I didn't know that Alexa's going to record 48 hours or whatever in my house.
Yeah, that in itself is what bothers me, just the fact that it does that.
Mm-hmm.
But keep going. Yeah.
Well, and then it goes on to say that, you know, the First Amendment right applies to one's individual right to speak, but their ability to receive information and ideas, but also, there's a certain anonymous aspect of that. But then I can absolutely see the you know, the use case of investigative officials, that if this is recording stuff and then there was a crime, do we, you know, provide what you need to have the evidence? And part of me says yes, but I'm also scared to death that it echoes recording like that.
Yeah,
I don't know,
and,
man.
And it's really two-faced of Amazon to say, oh, we can keep this data and we can, you know, basically eavesdrop in it so we can send you ads for shit you might want to buy, but we won't give it to the police. Right. I think that's a bunch of crap. I don't buy Amazon's argument there, because they're using that. They're using that voice information. You can bet they are. And if they're not, they're trying to. So what's the difference between Amazon eavesdropping on your conversation and the cops? F you, Amazon. That's not right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah. So I think Amazon's really disingenuous about this. And I mean that. F you, Amazon. But this is an interesting thing, right? And the government likes these kinds of cases where it, you know, they're going to wear down privacy laws by saying it's a murder case, for Christ's sake. We have to have this information to solve a murder. Well, once you do that, then where do you draw the line between what do you go after, what can you go after, and what you can't? You know, and the other thing about Alexa that's annoying is, okay, so I have a Kindle Fire. If it's on, does it just automatically, you know, operate as an Alexa device without me knowing it, without my family knowing it? You know, that kind of stuff, right? I think that is really nasty. I don't like these devices. I know a lot of people use them. I don't like them for that reason.
I don't want one either, but when I found, now that I know this, last thing I'm going to get. Maybe I'm old school. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you and me together, brother, because, yeah. You know, I don't, you know, I like to speak freely. I like to have Tourette's in my own house. I like to make things up. I talk to myself. Jesus, if I'm the only one in the house, you know, I'll be like rehearsing a presentation or rehearsing a speech or a scenario or something like that. And it may not be rooted in reality. You know, I might be going off on some fantasy of something. Do I want that to be used as some kind of evidence about my mental state or about what I'm thinking about doing or something like that? Hell no, right? You know, somebody could be watching a TV show and get upset, or watching the news and get upset and just spout off. We need to be able to spout off and do those things in our homes. I mean, our home should be our safe place, our solitude place, a place where we can be just kind of crazy, a place where we can go off, and in public and friends and work and all those things. We might not ever say the kinds of things that we do at home. I just don't think that I am really against the police cracking this information. I'm against Amazon cracking it too.
Well, I'm against Amazon having it, but given that the police know it, I don't disagree with them wanting it, because if there's evidence, but either way, it shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be evidence to have. I'll agree with you there.
These things
crazy.
Are creepy. These things creep me out.
Ugh. I'm not having any electric in my next house. Anyways, next up on the list of topics here for today is that Microsoft Research is developing artificial intelligence to put coders out of a job. Interessante, if you ask me. Smart on smart. Now, this project is called Deep Coder, and it really has one kind of scope of where it's at right now, and it actually makes a lot of sense. Its scope is to take complex programming requirements and make it fit in 5 lines of code. And this, I've actually, from my SQL DBA days, this actually sounds great. How many times have I seen a 14-mile stored procedure that literally just moved a box from here to there? It was really overkill sometimes. But the thought of putting coders out of a job with, you know, some of these artificial intelligence technologies, and if you look at like what they're doing in Azure with the face recognition API, kind of an interesting angle. But putting coders out of a job, I don't know. They're still going to be needing coders to code this. What do you guys
think? I think that people just look at this problem completely incorrectly, and they look at and I think it's clickbaity, and it gets headlines, and people read it because the titles say this, but it's really more about augmenting people's jobs rather than replacing people's jobs. And so people who then, you know, were really good at doing some sorts of debugging or certain types of recognition of what code works with, you know, other code, or really more just heavy lifting. Like this particular use case is really just looking at different pieces of source code and see if they work together, or solving, you know, 5-line code problems. And certain people could be really good at that. Maybe they like it, but what they really need to do is they need to move higher up the stack. They need to be able to, and as this, you know, as this piece asserts, they need to be able to tell a computer or tell a system what the logic should be or what the code should be like, and be able to express that. And that logic should then drive the code, and should be able to eventually have people who are just creative, intuitive, and logic-driven or application-driven. They don't necessarily have to be really good at expressing those ideas through the language, because there's going to be a PC or application or AI that does that for you. And I don't see that inherently as a bad thing.
I'll agree with you there, especially when you think about portability. The moment someone else has to manually change it or import it and start using it another way, code handoff can be a big deal, because I've seen plenty of ugly.
Yeah, and Linus Torvald actually was going on a rant about this, about how about the Linux kernel, and about how process was everything, and about how difficult it was to hand code off, and how different people working on the kernel for Linux was just so incredibly difficult, whereas was all the complexity involved. And if you can remove that and really just sort of talk about what the logic is, what the goal is, and express that in a way, because it's funny, because code is an abstraction of machine language, and then really you're looking at this AI interface being an abstraction of code, and so you're abstracting all the way out from machine language to code to just expression of logic. And if you can do that, I think pair coding, crowdsourcing is going to be a whole lot easier, to your point, Rick.
Crowdsourcing angle, I think that makes, actually, that is my point, and it makes a heck of a lot of sense. Interesting. Hey, Mark, any opinion on Microsoft Research now that you don't work at Microsoft anymore?
Yeah, so I'm just looking forward to having embedded code somehow show up as the next version of Microsoft's Tay. You guys remember Tay from last year?
I try to forget that.
Googling now.
Yeah, so Tay, T-A-Y. It was from the end of March 2016. I'm looking at this article, March 24th, 2016, right? They created an AI bot, and they were working on voice recognition stuff, and she's supposed to be chill. And Tay learned stuff from the people that she talked to. And basically, Tay got hyper-corrupted by the people that had conversations with her. You can only imagine, like, you know, bent guys deciding to talk to an AI robot.
She looks like my niece, man. That's not cool.
Yeah. Well, when you read some of the stuff that Tay said, it's like, repeat after me, Hitler did nothing wrong. And Ted Cruz is the Cuban Hitler. And
Do you know what this was, though, Mark? And nobody saw at the time, but this was the precursor to detecting fake news. I think she was working right. And I think she just started to detect early fake news cycles within social media, and nobody figured out. They turned her off thinking that, oh, well, this must be broken. It's like, no, she's picking up on fake news cycles in social media.
Yadine, I am not worthy. You are brilliant.
Hey, it would have been nice if I figured it out back in May of 2016.
I am so not worthy. I love that, right? So let's get things like Tay out there to uncover fake news. I'm not sure how that would work, but I mean, when you read this article, if you search for Tay, T-A-Y, and just say, you know, March 2016, you'll see articles on it. And it's funny, it's vulgar, and maybe Yadin is right.
I think absolutely that's legit, because there's a certain, like, you see this, what's newsworthy, what is fake news. Both of those actually are two separate disciplines. Like, even my beloved Twitter app now has this new little widget, like, called Moments, and it's like got a lightning bolt, and actually,
That's been the favorite part of everyone to forget for, like, the last 6 or 7 months, Moments.
This brother ho likes it, okay? I like it because it just makes it easy for me.
Jack loves you, okay? Because Jack was all about Moments, and so Jack said, you should tweet out to Jack, tell him, make sure that, you know, you're a fan. Let him know you're a fan, because he doesn't have many out there.
Who's Jack? Is he Jack
Dorsey
on Twitter? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, the other thing is
Jack on Twitter.
There we go. The other bit is that the way that on the Twitter app, it kind of puts the best stuff at your top of feed, not necessarily a chronological feed. That type of stuff is pretty cool. So I'm actually thinking, you know, you're onto something, Yadin.
Well, yeah. I mean, circling back to the whole Microsoft story about, you know, AI bot, it's really, it's just the same vein as every other story where people said, you know, that this was going to replace jobs. It's a bit clickbaity, but it also, it sparks a good conversation that more of these sort of mundane routine tasks that are simple and routine and redundant can be replaced by a piece of technology so that the people who are coding or who are managers of products can express, you know, themselves in different ways. Like for us now, I mean, we don't have to type on typewriters. We can, you know, bang stuff out on, you know, on a computer and source and have other stuff, you know, correct all of our mistakes and not have to use whiteout, all these different things that, you know, yes, it destroyed those jobs, but those people then, you know, there's, you don't have to go and be a typist anymore. You can work in desktop publishing, or you can be a proofer, or you can use more of your capacity. Like more of the creative part of our brain will start being used when a lot of this sort of mundane tasks get.
You mean you don't think putting wires in a patch bay in a telephone operating office was a good use of people's brains?
Hey, there's still people that are patching a lot of stuff. It may not be telephone lines, but there's a lot of people plugging cords in to ports, yeah, and unplugging them from ports and plugging them to other ports.
I think in the future, we're all either going to be generating real news or fake news. And that means that, you know, 99.99% of us will be generating fake news.
Well, yeah. Especially me, considering I don't like Wi-Fi. I'm plugging crap in. But anyways.
Yeah, we'll have to get together. And, well, wait a minute. And some number of us will be brewing beer.
Hey, yes. Now.
Yeah. I don't want an AI to ever brew beer for me. I want to do that myself.
Yeah, you know, they sell these machines to brew beer, you know, these automated machines for beer brewing.
Yeah,
they suck. The beer sucks.
Yeah. Ooh, that just sounds like the bread maker, the bread machine, bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of the bread machine, though. I'll let a robot make bread, but not beer.
Okay, all right. There we have it. Do I have to cast the deciding vote here?
Yeah.
I'm abstaining on bread.
Maybe we should move on to the last story.
Last story. In the interest of time, we are talking about Disney developing rooms with ubiquitous wireless charging. A prototype hotel room that will allow multiple devices to charge wirelessly in the room. So if you walk into the Matrix, thou phone, thou tablet shall be charged, and probably your NADs fried. So basically, this notion of ubiquitous wireless power delivery, I think this is very interesting. But where's the like impact on a human here for this? That's what kind of gets me a little dodgy here.
I thought of that first too. I think it's not going through the air. It's not like over the air charging. It's just there's charging pads that just sort of sit there on certain surfaces and you just lay your phone down without having to plug it in. That's my understanding.
No, it goes through the air.
It's non-contact.
No, Dean, this is through the air.
It says it's like Wi-Fi.
You walk in a room and you get a little magnetic field applied to you, right?
No, I'm looking at this story and it's saying simply rest a device atop a charging pad to add juice.
Yeah, but that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about the phone that sits in your pocket that's next to the family jewels.
Yeah.
is getting an uptick from magnetic fields.
They want to take that pad away. And they want to make it just everywhere. Wow.
Yeah, we're not wearing funny underwear here, Yadin.
That's crazy.
Let me quote. Disney's approach eliminates the need to be on that pad, that charging pad. All you need to be is in the room, and your device will start charging automatically. And depending on where you are in the room, delivery can be as high as 95% efficient. I quoted it wrong, but...
This is Darwinism in big effect, right? Maybe they just install this at the Disney theme parks and they shuffle through the deck more often.
Can that wireless energy, like, you know, can I pass energy from my children to me using those fields? Standing there and like and just charge myself, but just put the kids in the room, it could suck the energy out of them and transfer it to me.
Being a human shield, Yadin.
I think this is interesting technology, but I'm actually... I'm surprised yet not surprised that Disney is doing it first. I mean, they actually have a lot of technology that they work on, right? That's not just movies and you know, stormtroopers and stuff. But I think that the notion of having a technology like this you got to do something more with it than put it in your hotel room. I mean, does this mean if you walk in a grocery store, you get in your car, you're at home, you're walking down the sidewalk? I got to walk on the smart sidewalk to charge my phone while I walk. Heck, let me just plug my foot into the sidewalk and charge myself. I mean, how is this? This is this interesting technology. They didn't say anything about a patent or, you know, specific research, but I think there's some secret magic.
I mean, years ago, I've seen demos of this on stage, and it's really cool. It is very, very cool. Where they have a wireless charger, has something that's totally dead. They put it near the ring, and it basically does over the air the same thing, let's say, like your toothbrush charger does. You know, because electrons are basically just vibrating against each other and moving a wave of energy through a line. So they're just going to move that wave of energy through the air, and it converges at the pickup point or that charging interface. Wireless charging interface on the phone, and then that takes the energy just like, you know, any other, you know, device does on that pad, but it puts that energy wave through the air, and hopefully not augmenting any of our brain cells in the process.
I think we should modify the sun and get the sun to do this for us.
No, right? This is
so anytime we go outside, we get our phones charged, man.
Yeah, unless it's nighttime, then we're screwed.
So this is just like a smart ant hill, right? Where the ant hill is the power, and I got a line of little ants, which are the electrons walking into my phone. Is that what you're saying, Yadin?
No, it's not quite like an ant. It's like a wave, like through water, like, you know, dropping a pebble like in the pond, and a ripple's going through. That's how, you know, electrons, you know, are sort of transmitting this. Light is like, you know, light is different, you know, when, you know, transmitting energy. But for as far as electrons goes, power, yeah, it's a wave. So this is just a wave going through the air instead of going through a physical copper line.
So let's take this Disney ubiquitous charging and let's make this a hot or not going around real quick. I'm going to have to give it a hot.
Screaming hot on my side.
Way hot in my pocket. Like I'm getting burned.
Like
my battery blowing up.
Head in the microwave
this,
hot.
This is going to make more batteries blow up than ever. It's hot.
Super hot.
All right, we will see you all next time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Boom.